Well, we're back, and it seems like forever and a day sometimes, you know, when you, of course, being away with some of dealing with Karen and some of that, and then just being down at the castle and then coming back and having a snow day. Seems like it's probably been, if you look back, it's probably been a month or so since we've been in Mark chapter 7. We left off at verse 24, but God's word is refreshing to us. It speaks to us volumes far more than man's word can speak. So let's pick up there. It says from, let's read through, we'll read through 30. We'll go to the end today, but let's read through 30 to begin with. It says, from there he arose and went to Tyre and Sidon. And he entered a house and wanted no one to know it, but he could not be hidden. For a woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him and came and fell at his feet. And the woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by birth, and she kept asking him to cast out the demon out of her daughter. But Jesus said to her, let the children be filled first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. And she answered and said to him, yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs under the table eat from the children's crumbs. Then he said to her, for this saying, go your way. The demon has gone out of your daughter. And when she had come to her house, she found the demon gone out and her daughter lying on the bed. So we went from Gennesar, which is by the west side of the Sea of Galilee there, up to this region called Tyre. Well, there are two cities, Tyre and Sidon, and it was the region of the Phoenicians, right? And it lied in that portion right there on the Mediterranean. If you think about where it is today, it's a city that's located on the port there, and it's on you would call it modern day Lebanon there on the coast of the Mediterranean. Well, it's interesting why this region? Why would Jesus go to this region? These two cities. Well, if you would turn to Luke chapter 10, chapter 10, verse 13. Jesus confronts some Jewish areas here. He says, woe to Chorazin, woe to Bethsaida, for if the mighty work, I'm sorry, what did I say? Verse 13 of chapter 10 of Luke. I don't know if I told you that even. Maybe I did. Woe to you, Chorazin. Woe to you, Bethsaida. For if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Tyre or Sidon, they would have repented long ago, sitting in sackcloth and ashes. Sitting in humility, in other words. But it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon to the judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, who are exalted to heaven, will be brought down to Hades. He who hears you hears me. He who rejects you rejects me. And he who rejects me rejects him who sent me. So, the The context here in Luke chapter 10 was that there would be a judgment assessed against these cities, Chorazin, Bethsaida, Capernaum. There would be a judgment assessed to them. And Jesus was saying, look at this region, Tyre and Sidon, if they had heard or seen what you guys had seen, they would have repented a long time ago. It's important to notice that this region is Gentile, a Gentile region. And so within these cities, Tyre and Sidon, there is a Gentile population. He's saying, look at Jews, if the Gentiles had heard about these things in which I performed before you, there must have been some great acts of that Jesus performed in these cities. I always love when people say, well, if God would only do this, I'd believe. He says, will you? Because I've been performing acts of miracles and I've been performing, doing things within your midst, and you still haven't seen me. Or he's saying, man, if these cities, if they had seen what you guys have seen, if these Gentiles had seen what you Jews have seen, they would have repented, they would have turned from their sin, and they would have followed me. These two cities are mentioned a few times in the Old Testament, including in Judges chapter 1, which we just went through just a while ago. Israel failed to conquest this city, or Sidon, anyways, when they came into the Promised Land. They worshipped their own gods, Sidonian gods, on several occasions in Judges chapter 10 and 1 Kings 11. They obtained materials from Israel, would obtain materials from Sidon and Tyre for the building of the temple in 1 Chronicles 22. And King Huram of Tyre provided many of the temple furnishings for Solomon in 1 Kings 7. They're also mentioned in Ezra as being part of or helping in the building of the temple. In Ezra chapter 3, Queen Jezebel was a Sidonian. And the Sidonian city of Zarephath, where you remember in Kings chapter 17, where the widow took care of Elijah, and then Elijah, or the Lord, provided flour and oil that was endless in the famine. And then her son would die, and Elijah, of course, would raise him from the dead. There's prophecies of its overthrow, that region's overthrow, in Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, Joel, Amos, Zechariah. We see Tyre being seized by Nebuchadnezzar in 585 B.C., and Alexander Great in 322. So they're mentioned there in the Old Testament. But Jesus makes it pretty clear when he goes to Matthew. When we look at Matthew chapter 15, we see that Jesus actually calls out these two cities in the same in the sense, Mark, right, shows what he took out of the situation, and Matthew does the same, and he was there to minister to the Jews. But I think these two cities are important to recognize that they're Gentile cities, because for one thing, I think a lot of the times the Gentiles were used, though Israel was supposed to be used as light in the world to the Gentiles. I think sometimes the Gentiles were often used to be light to Israel, to almost shame them into their relationship, you know. And maybe we can take from this is that when God works in our lives and we complain about things, we don't necessarily thank Him for what He's done. You know, my wife reminded me the other day that that there's a lot of people that are a lot worse off than we are. Perhaps in my complaining or whining or whatever it was there. But sometimes when the Lord blesses us, we need to see it. And sometimes He shows us through other people. You know, I even think of Crystal being one of them people that the Lord just allows us, our family, to see. Just to say, you know, what are you complaining about? What are you whining about? Don't you see the blessings of the Lord? And sometimes the Lord would use other people to show us those things. You know, one of God's plea to Chorazin and Bethsaida was if this was the same thing was shown unto Tyre and Sidon, that they would see it and that they would accept. Sometimes in our own lives, we need to see the hand of God. We need to see what He's offered us. Because there's many people out there. You know, we were even talking about third world countries this morning in our pre-church meeting. Our pre-church fellowship. And how, boy, we just don't get it in America. We think we have it all bad. We really don't. As one would say, we need to count our blessings. Each day, each breath. But I think God sometimes uses, in this case, He used the Gentiles to shame the Jews. And sometimes He uses other people to shame us. You know? That we need to just come to Jesus. We need to fall at His feet. We need to worship Him. We need to repent of our attitudes that we have sometimes, thinking that we have any right at all. We're a society of rights. When we come to Christ, we have forfeited all our rights to Him. He governs our actions. He tells us what to do. He is the supreme authority in our life. We forfeit it. All for Him. For the love of God. But Jesus would come there, and it says that He entered a house, and He wanted no one to know. I'm not sure the reason for that. I'd probably be reading between the lines a little bit. Maybe, you know, maybe it was just to have some solitude. Maybe it was just to get away. Maybe it was just to get away and pray to the Father, like He often did sometimes. But he entered this house, and for whatever the reason was, Jesus wasn't appalled when He was interrupted. Whatever Jesus is doing right now, we can interrupt Him. He wants to be interrupted. He would like us to interrupt Him a little bit more. And it says there that, but He could not be hidden. You know, the Lord cannot be hidden. We can lock Him out of our schools. We can make a universal prayer in our government meetings to accept all kinds of religion within. We can even lock Him out of the church. But He can't be hidden. Why is that? because we are the light of the world. He is within us. They might be able to lock him out by word and action. But when we're in the midst, he's there. Cannot be hidden. And shouldn't that be the testimony of the Christian life? Is that when we enter in, Christ can't be hidden. That people would see him in our house, in our temple, and bang, they would get a vision of the Lord. I like the fact, when I think about hidden, I always think about the kids playing hide and go seek, right? You know, the Lord never hides from us. He's never hiding for us. He's seeking us. He's the one seeking us, and usually we're the one hiding from him, if we're altogether honest. We don't necessarily want to hear what he has to say. Because if we hear what he has to say, we're accountable for what he's told us. And so, it says in Romans there that there's none that seek, right? Only God. God seeks after us. So we look at this woman, and she comes to Jesus. She comes to him, but really by the grace of God does she come to Jesus. Right? The Lord has drawn her in to himself through what she's heard and seen that the Lord has done. In her life, it has been proven to her that this Jesus, God in the flesh, is good. And that she wants a part of him. In a positive way, of course. So it's by the grace of God that she would be drawn. But why does she come? Why does she come? Well, she has necessity for him. There's a part of her that just is, she needs him. Because there's problems in her lives. In her life and in our life, right? We need Jesus. There's crisis in our life. The biggest crisis is ourself. That's our biggest crisis. It's not other people. It's ourself. We listen to ourselves too much. We're self-centered. If we've tasted food, we want it to taste a certain way. We don't want to taste how somebody else wants it to taste. We're self-centered. But she comes because her daughter is possessed with a demon. She has an unclean spirit. She has a crisis in her life. And she heard. Number two, she heard him. Heard about him. In other words, she listened to the reports. She discerned the reports because I'm sure some things that she heard about Jesus weren't factual. But I don't think she just heard and believed. I think she heard. She did her little investigation of the facts. And then she probably believed. She discerned and deciphered and so forth. But she heard about him, the things that he had done. The things that he had done were verifiable. The man that was possessed with the demon wasn't possessed anymore. The woman that was healed of the blood disorder was healed. They were verifiable, right? Not only did she hear it, but she actually saw it. She could verify it. And she came to Jesus to worship him. When we come to Jesus to worship him, what does that mean? You know, Jairus, them same words fell at his feet. Jairus in chapter 5, the ruler of the synagogue, there it says that he fell down at his feet when his daughter was near death. Sometimes it takes critical situations. It takes these crises in our lives to get us to that point where, okay, we've had enough of our own dealings. We need the supreme God to do this for us. We need to be at His feet, right? At His feet. To worship God means that we acknowledge His authority in our lives. That it's no longer our authority that we have over our lives, it's His authority. We acknowledge that what He says is true. Because we accept His authority in our lives. Think of Luke chapter 17. Remember the leopards that were healed there, and the one that came back and says that he fell on his face at his feet. Why? So that he could give thanks to God. So that he could adore Jesus. That he could acknowledge that Jesus was the one that healed him. It's genuine worship. We don't come to worship God to satisfy some ritualistic kind of thing. Some religious thing. We come to worship God because we love Him. We're thankful for what He's done in our lives. We don't come to worship with all our complaints, all our wants. We come to worship Him so that we could know Him. So we can know who He is. Right? I don't think she came based upon what she needed. She came because of the faith that she had in Him. She came to worship Him. She had already put her faith in Him from what she heard, probably what she saw, and what she knew. See, I look at this lady, this Gentile lady, and I can tell she's all in to Jesus. Because when Jesus, in a sense, discourages her or kind of turns her away a little bit here, she's still willing to wait for Him. Still willing to wait on Him. To be there and ask Him more. You know? I'm convinced that Jesus doesn't just want to hear about us on Sunday. He just doesn't want to see us sitting in the pews on Sunday. He wants us to have conversation with Him through the week. Look it, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow in my own life. I don't know what the next step is for the Lord for me. Right? But that doesn't stop me from asking Him. I should be wanting to know that next step. And He wants to hear from us. He wants to know our willingness. He wants to know if we're really in. That it's more than just words that we would say. See, Jesus made it very clear to her in what He said in Matthew chapter 20, or verse 24 of 15, chapter 15. He says, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That's what He said to her. In other words, I'm trying to draw the Jews back in. I'm trying to draw them back in. But then it says right after that she came and worshipped Him. She was all in. It says, okay, Lord, I understand that. And even here, she agrees with Him. She comes and worships Him and she says, Lord, probably one of the best prayers we can ever ask of the Lord. Lord, help me. Have you ever felt like you're at the end of it? You don't have any more ideas. You don't have any more steps that you can possibly take. And you say, Lord, help me. That's where I think the Lord wants our hearts. It's possibly the best prayer that we can honestly ask of the Lord. Help me, Lord. Can't see correctly. Don't have the wisdom for a situation. Help me. In verse 27, Jesus says to him, Let the children be filled first. He's speaking of the children of Israel there. He's saying, and again, referencing Matthew 15 there, he came to seeking after Israel. He came to seek after the Jews. And he mentions this term, little dogs, and that really means puppy. And it's funny because if you go back to what the Jews would call the Gentiles, often what they would call them is dog. They would refer to them as dogs. And I know that growing up, you know, I wasn't always a Christian, obviously. And I remember as I was in high school, some of the girls that weren't necessarily the best looking or the most appealing girls, we used to call them dogs. I don't know if you remember that term. It's not a very endearing term, you know. It is more of a description, perhaps, of what the exterior sees, you know. But it's just a derogatory. Dog is just a derogatory. Dogs in Israel were scavengers. You know, they were just unclean beasts. Israel looked upon the Gentiles as that kind of worthless scavengers. They just ate the crumbs under the table. Now, Jesus here, he'd say, why does Jesus use this term? Well, he's saying puppies. It's more of a gentler way of approaching it. But the reality was, is this is true about all of us, isn't it? All of us are dogs. Puppies. But she doesn't disagree with the Lord. Do you notice that? The next verse down, she says, "Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord, I agree that. I see that. I see that. I'm not the child there of Israel. But even the pups need some crumbs from time and time again." So she doesn't try to protest. She doesn't say, "Jesus, you're discriminating." Jesus said, "Look, I'm telling you, I came first for Israel." But she presents herself before the Lord in all humility. Paul said, "We are nothing." At least here, she's a puppy. Right? Paul said nothing. Ironside would say, "Nothing appeals to our blessed Lord more than faith coupled with humility." Having belief in the Lord and couple that with humility, to be humble, to be lowly, undeserving of any favor. It's a good place to sit in humility. It's good for us to sit in humility. Remember, in Romans chapter 11, actually, you don't have to turn there, but chapter 11, verses 17 through 21 reads, "And if some of the branches are broken off, you being a wild olive tree were grafted in among them, and with them become a partaker of the root and fatness of the olive tree. Do not boast against the branches. But if you do boast, remember that you do not support the root, but the root supports you." Speaking of the Gentiles being grafted in to what the Jews had. And you will say then, "Branches are broken off that I might be grafted in." Well said, because of unbelief they were broken off. God just doesn't break them off so that you fit in. God doesn't take the Jew and go, "Sorry, Jew, I know you believe, but you're out and he's in. God doesn't do that. He says, no, they fell off because of their unbelief. They were broken off. And you stand by faith. Do not be haughty, but fear. For God will not spare the natural branches. He may not spare you either. We are grafted in. It's by pure grace that God allows the Gentile to even have a part in His plan. We stand there waiting for the crumbs to fall from the table. We're delighted when the crumbs do come. And that's what she was doing. She was just waiting in humility before the Lord. But she kept asking. She kept asking. Remember in Luke 18, chapter 18, verses 1 through 9, it talks about the persistent widow that went before the judge. And after that it says, the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge said. And shall God not avenge His own elect who cry out day and night for Him, though He bears long with them? I will tell you that He will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will He really find faith on the earth? Will He really find faith? Will He really find this kind of faith? This faith of this Phoenician woman that waited upon the Lord and understood her position within society, and yet she just waited there and asked and asked and asked of the Lord in all humility. Just begged Him. Lord, can I just have a crumb? I just want a crumb. I don't want the whole loaf. I just want the crumb. I just want some crumbs, Lord. She appreciated just the little that the Lord was going to give her. Just a little. Do you appreciate what the Lord's done for you? There's nothing wrong with wanting more of that the Lord has provided. There's nothing wrong with that. But do you appreciate the little crumbs that He's just allowed to fall your way? See, she knew that those crumbs that the Lord was allowing to come her way, that she was allowed to pick up, right? She understood them to be powerful. She understood that anything that she got from the Lord was just awesome. She knew that if she was able to just get some crumbs, that her daughter would be healed. That this affliction from the enemy would be done with. That the enemy would be casted out of her. She could have been discouraged, and she could have, by the remarks of Jesus, she could have wandered away, but she would have never received any of the crumbs. She could have took that position. She could have protested against the Lord. She could have made public witness of His abusive language to her, toward her, how it offended her. Instead, she took a position of humility before her Lord. And she continued to ask Him. She continued to go to Him. And then He delivered. He delivered. He gave her some crumbs. And I don't even think she believed that He would do it in this way. But He didn't even go to the daughter. He just cast out the demons. Wait a minute, Lord. You didn't even go to my daughter. How could you have cast it? You don't see that here, do you? You don't see her questioning that the Lord... How could you have done this, Lord? You weren't there. You weren't at my daughter's bedside to cast out the demons. See, when Jesus says, it's done, it's done. When He does it, He does it. she didn't get like this chill that went over her. Right? She didn't get this funny sensation that the Lord touched her daughter. But she knew because she went. After the Lord had told her and said to her, the demon has gone out of your daughter. And it says then, and when she had come to her house, she found the demon gone and her daughter lying on the bed. She had only one belief, and that was that the Lord did it. Why? Because He said He did. And her faith, her belief, was so strong that she believed that He did it. Sorry. Somebody must be texting me. It's funny because I turned my alarm on the other day because the girls were doing basketball and we didn't know what phone they were going to use. So I turned my phone on. I usually have it on vibrate. So my apologies. I didn't set the good example, did I? So this is a warning for you guys. But just think of the crumbs that were under the table for this lady that the Lord gave her. We'll finish quickly here, but just to maybe go through this last section in chapter 7. Again, departing from the region of Tyre and Sidon, he came through the midst of the region of the Decapolis to the Sea of Galilee. Remember this area. This area was down in the south part of the Galilee, by the Galilee. And if you remember right, back in Mark 5, right, we covered this about the demon-possessed man, right? It says there that Jesus would cast the demons out of him. And it would also say that Jesus told him after that, before he left, he said, go to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you. And now he has, and how he has compassion on you. So we get the idea that this demon-possessed man that was now healed from the demon possession went to his friends, went to his neighbors, went to the community, and shared the gospel with them. It says, then they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to put his hand on him. It's funny how we tell Jesus how to get his job done. Okay, Lord, you just put your hand on him and he'll be healed. Right? The Lord said, no, I got a different method this time. And he took him aside from the multitude and put his fingers in his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue. That's interesting to me. That he would put his fingers in his ears first, I guess, and then spat. And if you look to the Amplified Version, that he says that he spat on his hand. So he didn't just spit in the wind, kind of thing. He spat on his hand, and if there's any germaphobes here, he actually touched the tongue with his saliva to, what? We can't do that nowadays. You mean that might contaminate my tongue? With your saliva. This is holy saliva right here. But God did this. And I think sometimes when we look at Jesus' miracles, right? When we look at his miracles, sometimes he didn't always do it the same way. He didn't have these patterns. And you see some of these guys, they think God's got to do it all the same. Right? I mean, how many people told us how many different things, and maybe you're one of them, so don't be offended if I say this, but how many people told us so many different things about Karen's operation? We take all these opinions in, and I'm not saying some of them weren't bad or they weren't terrible or anything like that. But each situation is different. And sometimes Jesus works in different ways, right? I mean, sometimes he did. I mean, why did they come up with, just put your hands on him, Lord? Because it was kind of the conventional way. They saw it. They must have saw that happen. So they thought, well, he'll just put his hands on him. No, Jesus sticks his fingers in his ear, spits on his hand, puts it on their tongue. His tongue. And the guy's sitting there saying, why couldn't we have done this the conventional way? Right? You wonder if Jesus maybe had some garlic or something previous, you know, just for fun, right? And then Jesus, it says there that he looked up to heaven and sighed, you know, that sighing. God sympathizes with our afflictions. He isn't a God that sits up there and punishes us with afflictions. He sighed. He understood the tough spot this guy was in. He couldn't hear, and then his speech wasn't very good, and he couldn't communicate well with people, and he understood this impediment. And he looked unto heaven and sighed, and he said to him, Ephatha, that is to be opened or to be cured, right? Open the earways, cure the impediment of speech. And it says, immediately his ears were opened and the impediment of his tongue was loosed, and he spoke plainly. Then he commanded them that they should tell no one. But the more he commanded them, the more widely they proclaimed. It's kind of like kids, don't do this. Right? And they go do it anyways. And they were astonished beyond measure. They were just blown away by it all. Wow. Saying, he has done all things well. He makes both the deaf to hear and the mute to speak. He does all things well. He does all things well because God does things God's way. Right? And certainly, if we are faithful to Him, we would seek to do His way. Right? Not our way. We're not going to lead, Lord. You're going to lead. I'm going to follow. I'm going to believe You for all things. Because He does all things well. We can't say that about ourselves, can we? I know I go into some people's houses and they go, I have no idea what electricity even is. I'm not messing with that outlet. Because it's not mine. Right? They don't do all things well. And I don't either. Right? If I was to draw your face on a piece of paper, you might be able to recognize that it's a piece of paper with a bunch of scribble on it, but you probably wouldn't recognize your face, right? Now, if Hannah drew it, that's a different story. You'd get it, but not me. But we have to seek His ways, right? We have to seek what He's doing. We have to have our faith put in Him, not ourselves. That's why this lady was sitting there asking, because she was at the end of herself. She had no place to go. Maybe she went to the Sidonian gods, right? Maybe she did. She went there and they just didn't help her. But now she sits at the feet of Jesus and she worships Him and she waits for Him. And that picture to us should never go away. We don't have anything to offer, Lord. We sit at Your feet. We keep asking. We keep asking, and we keep asking.